This is January 16th in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Keith Edwards at Northside.
Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon.
I have a bunch of questions to ask you about Northside and about growing up and then about the school. So let's start with the first one, and that is what were the homes like in Northside when you were growing up here? I guess that was in the 50s?
Yes. I grew up in Carver. That's where I was born and raised.
In Pintop?
No. Right on Rosemary Street, between the Marriott restaurant, Marathon restaurant, and Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Uh-huh.
Now, we had a home sitting right smack in the middle of it. In fact, it was right at location where the animal hospital and where the parking lot for Kentucky Fried Chicken and that building, that's where we played ball and children in the neighborhood would come and play in that area. But I did. I grew up in Carver, and I think I stayed until I was about probably 11 years old. And but there was no difference between Chapel Hill and Carver. We always looked at it as one and the same. And now, Carver was a different environment versus Chapel Hill. In Carver, you didn't have a fear of whites. You had more prejudice in Carver at the time when I was growing up. And when we moved from Carver to Chapel Hill, it was a totally different environment as far as whites. Whites lived in harmony. I very seldom heard the word nigger, or people didn't want you to even walk down the street. They didn't stick the dogs on you, water hoses, things like that. We had that happen quite frequent in Carver when we were growing up. But most of the time when we experienced that was when we were going out through Carver to go out to the football stadium. Because at that time, Chapel Hill and Carver, the city schools had one football stadium, and it was for both schools, and it was out on not sure what's the name of the street, but it's right along the side of the out behind the fire department, but I just forget the name of the street right now. But we would walk from this neighborhood all the way out to Carver, past Town Hall in Carver, almost to the cemetery in Carver, and so, you know, of course we had to walk through Carver, and when you walk through, some people really didn't even want you to walk that close to their homes. And so sometimes you hear the dogs barking, or they throw rocks or things at us. But after a while, we started throwing rocks back or doing little things, and that tapered off.
What was the difference between the whites in Carver and the whites in Chapel Hill? Was there an economic difference? Were there other differences that made them...
In Carver, you had many low-income, maybe some middle-income incomes in Carver. In Chapel Hill, you had more higher income, middle-class and higher income. And so you had a different breed of people, and plus they were more educated than many of the whites who live in Carver.
And you think that's what made the difference in how the black community was treated?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, regardless of how we felt about each other, when there was a crisis, we both came together and we worked as one. You put aside your differences because some family was having a crisis. And when that family had a crisis, it's just like, you know, the whole town had a crisis and everybody just went out to do whatever they could for that family.
So it didn't matter in Carver if you were white or black.
Race was no issue when it came to a person had a crisis, especially if you were burning out of your home, caught on fire. You know, even if you were evicted or something, you know, people just came and they did whatever they could for you. But hold one second.
Go ahead. Describe the outside of the homes. Were they like shacks, or were they nice homes, or was there a neighborhood of nice homes and then a neighborhood of shacks, or were they mixed?
Well, you see, we didn't consider them as shacks because it provided warmth from the elements, and you know, it kept the rain off you. We never looked at them as being shacks. We looked at them as being a place to live. And even though in many homes, and I visit plenty back then, you would go to someone's home, including mine, you may see pots sitting around. If you had a leaky roof, you just put a pot out to catch the water until your father, whoever, could get up on the roof and patch that. Because you didn't get roofers or, you know, something happened around your house, you didn't go out and you hired people to do your work. People back then just had a great imagination, and if you didn't have the right material to use, let's say to patch up a roof, you put whatever you could. I know several times my father had got some, what is that, linoleum that he had down on the floor, just cut some out and just went up on the roof and put that on there. And it held until he could get some shingles. And then some people had tin roofs. And when you had a tin roof, you just go take that piece of tin off and go get another one, put it down. And so, but our homes, it was a home, whether it was falling down around you or not. But we never called it a shack or a dump or anything like that. It was a home. And in many of the homes, you would see plastic put up to the windows to keep the wind out. And you would see that some people had it on the outside of the windows. Some people even had it on the inside. You know, this is during the wintertime, because many homes that was built way, way back, they didn't have insulation. You know, the house was just thrown up, nothing to keep, you know, the wind out, to keep the cold out. So you had to deal with that. And so, like I said, we had great imaginations back then. You would always see a rag or old towel or something pushed up against the doors. That's to keep some more, you know, wind out. Excuse me. Okay, thank you, honey. I got to just stop. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, with the black community, everybody was mixed in. You had some homes who, you know, some homeowners had maybe a brick home. If you had bricks, that was sort of like a status that, you know, you kind of moving up a little bit, or you were just in more debt than some of the other homeowners would like to be. And so even though you might have had some houses that did not look up to par or look as if, you know, no one should have been living in them, but remember, this was home to many. And many of the kids or people who lived in what we call the better homes, or they look better on the outside, they grew up in all the homes. You grew up in all the homes in the community. So you may have a home on one side of the street. You got plastered up to the windows. You know, everything that a person could do to hold a house together. But right beside it, you may have a different style of house.
Did your parents talk about the work that they did?
Well, I know what work they did, and well, believe it or not, we used to call them grown-up problems. Back when I was a small kid, parents did not talk about their jobs and experiences that they experienced on the job. The only thing I heard from my parents was, well, I've got to go to work. And they were never late, no matter, you know, how many kids they had or whatever. They was always on time. And going to work to them was like a duty. It was something that had to be done, and they went whether they wanted to go or not. And they never let on to us that there was ever a time when they didn't want to go. Because back when I was growing up as a child, it was, we had, in the black community, it was such a sense of survival. And you did what you had to do in order to survive. And a job was one of those. You had to have a job. And so any job was better than no job, because you knew you could survive as long as you was working and you could provide for yourself. And so the only thing, my mother, she was a cafeteria worker during integration. She worked at Chapel Hill High School, with junior high school. They just had one cafeteria for both. And then she did some maid work Then finally she was a housekeeper at UNC Hospital. Now my father was a plasterer, and that has to do with construction, plastering walls and things like that. And so he was into that, but the chemicals and mixture of the plaster itself made him very ill. And so he had to stop doing that, and then he got a job with the university working in housekeeping. But he's also had jobs as a cook, different odds and ends, because back then you would do any kind of job and you'd get your hands on. And some of them worked two jobs if they could get it.
But your parents didn't come home and talk about what happened during the day?
Oh, absolutely not. No, no, no. They came home and asked us, how was our day? Did we do our homework? You got your clothes ready for the next day? That was the conversation. If they talked about the job at all, they talked with each other and probably after we gone to bed. It was just never mentioned because they knew they had to work, and they didn't look at it like we do today. The stresses that's on the job today, they didn't think about it back then because it was not a stress, even though they might have been discriminated or mistreated on the job. They didn't look at it that way because, remember, in the back of their minds, it was survival. And this is what I have to take in order to keep this job. And I'll do it and I'll take it because my family can survive as long as I can do this. So they just didn't look at it as the job being a problem or any problems that happen on the job. They didn't think about it. They just went on.
Who did you think ran your family?
Oh, my mother, quite natural. Oh, most black families, the mother ran the home. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, absolutely. Their father was more of a disciplinarian. And your father, back then when I was growing up, they represented strength, a protector, someone who you know was always going to be there or be there if you needed someone for protection. They gave you what we call hard love. Now, they may not have, just took you in the arms and hugged you and did a whole lot of things that your mother would do. But your father, being that he was a disciplinarian in the family, he could love you but discipline you also. And my mother, it came a little bit harder for her to discipline us because that's a mother protecting her child. And but it would tickle me because sometimes my mother gave us a spanking, she'd be there, we think, all day. She may hit us three or four times, whereas my father gave us one good lick and that's it, you know. And so it was a difference in, you know, discipline. Because sometimes my mother would just tell you can't go outside. My father pop your butt, that's the end of it, you know. No more trouble, no more. And so, but like I said, the tower of strength as far as protecting the family, making you feel secure in your environment, and that nothing would ever happen to you, that was the father.
How many of your friends came from families where there was a divorce in the family?
Well, see, we didn't really look at it back then as parents that were divorced or father was not there, because you had a father and you had a mother everywhere. So it didn't really play a big part back in those days as far as a person having a dying need, you know, to have a father in the home, because you had a father everywhere you went. Your ministers were fathers, your teachers, male teachers, any male, your friend's father. I mean, a father was there everywhere you went, even a mailman, even the police officer, because police in those days were sort of like father figures, and that's how they treated you. But you have to remember that we grew up in the black community, we grew up on a foundation of respect. And you had to respect everyone. And so if you grew up in an environment like that, then, you know, you didn't have that bigger sense of loss because you didn't have a father or a mother in the home because somebody was always there to be one for you everywhere you went.
I know today the divorce rate is up around 50%.
Right.
In across the country.
Yes.
And what I'm wondering is whether when you grew up, you saw that same kind of divorce rate.
No, I didn't, because we didn't really look at it in the black community as far as divorce. I mean, it was almost like unheard of. I don't know too many families who families did break apart, or who, you know, where they separated and divorced.
Where did you think most of the men in Chapel Hill and Carborough worked?
Well, they either worked at the university or they picked up construction jobs, had jobs as cooks, because, for black males, there were more jobs available for them than it was for black females. The black females are the ones who really got crushed, you know, back in the day when I was a young child, because their options were very, very few. The most they had was housekeeping or being a maid in someone's home. And when you became a maid in someone's home, majority of the time they would not take out Social Security on you. So that's why we have some seniors today, they get a supplement from Social Security because they never paid into, you know, the Social Security fund. So being that they have some type of income coming in, they don't get what you call a regular Social Security check. And I don't think they actually have some of the benefits that other people do with Social Security. But that was one of the biggest injustices back in the day, that when you went and you took any type of job you can get your hands on, people took advantage of you because they did not take Social Security out on your check and send it in so that you could benefit from it when, you know, you were no longer able to work. And we have people right here at the senior center who is suffering from that now.
When you were growing up, did you see much of the middle class in the African-American community?
It was all mixed in. We didn't even consider them as middle class. We just considered them as having a little bit more than some of the rest of us.
Were there many people like that?
I wouldn't say. I think majority was sort of like me. We never considered ourselves down at the bottom. We used to say we were poor. But now, after we look back on things, we were never, ever poor. We were blessed. Because when you can make something out of nothing, you were blessed. And that's what many of us had to do. And also, the other reason we were not poor was because being blessed and being happy. You see, you're poor when you can't be happy. But we were happy. We were happy putting buckets all over the house or bowls or whatever we get our hands on to catch the drips when it rained. We had to plaster it up to the windows, you know, to keep the wind out on a cold day. We didn't have heating vents in our rooms. You only maybe had one stove in the entire house. And that stove had to heat the whole house. You didn't have vents and things in your bedrooms and all. I mean, it was just ice cold, you know. And so, again, that's where your father came in, because your father would get up so early in the mornings and he would build a fire before we even got out of bed. And this would be something like 5 or 5:30. And he'd have that stove going. And we would all go to that stove, get our little baths or whatever. But then we got some kerosene heaters. For the life of me, today I can't understand why there's so many fires with kerosene heaters, because we had them back in the day and they did not have any automatic shutoffs. And these stoves were knocked over and done some everything too, but no fire. But, and you had high ceilings in most of the homes. So all your heat went up. If you were standing up, you were warm. Sat down, you were cool. And so we had to deal with all of that, but still, we were happy. because we used to laugh about it, you know, and just joke about, well, I guess I'll stand up a while and watch TV so I can keep warm, you know. Or you might sit in the house, might have your jacket on or something, you know. But you did what you had to do. But it was so much laughter in the house, in the house. A lot of these things to us were just a way of life, and but it didn't hinder us or prevent us from, you know, enjoying life.
When you were, say, in middle school, did you have an encyclopedia or a dictionary or new books at home, or did you subscribe to the newspaper?
Well, we had, sometimes, if you go to the thrift shops, you can find old encyclopedias. Or back then we had people who were actually coming in the community who sold books. And they had a little plan, like a monthly payment that you could pay, you know, or to have the books. And so my mother, sometimes she would buy some encyclopedias, you know, when people came through the neighborhood selling them. Also, some of the grocery stores had the encyclopedias, and you could buy them from the grocery store. And, you know, a way to do that was, you know, sell bottles, because we used to have soda bottles, and you would get a refund on your soda bottles. And believe me or not, the soda bottles was very, very special to the black community, because we did a lot of things by saving our bottles and then turning them in for refunds.
How much was education stressed from your parents or your grandparents or aunts or uncles?
Well, see, now, education in the black community was mandatory. Your parents may not have been able to finish, but for their children, it was mandatory, and also it was law. You had to go to school when I was coming up, because they had a truant officer who used to go around and just look for kids who were supposed to be in school. And if you were out of school, they pick you up, put you in school, and notify your parents. And if you refused to go to school, or you were a problem child, then you went to the training school. The training school was very different from regular school. Training school meant that you were a problem. And nobody wanted to go to the training school, because it was frowned upon if you had to go. You were out of control. Your parents couldn't control you. And so that's where, you know, some kids did go. But once you got out, you tried to do everything you could not to go back. You know, this was a reflection on your parents.
When you say training school, you don't mean Orange County training school.
No. That was a school.
Right.
This is something different. This was a like for juveniles.
Who were in trouble.
Well, in trouble, out of control. But you got to also remember that sometimes they would pick black kids up. It didn't mean that you were out of control. It was just that, hey, you were caught out. And you may end up there, and your parents had to go down and get you. Yes.
What I'm trying to find out is your impression of what kind of resources, educational resources, were in the average black home in Northside, whether they had dictionaries, whether they had encyclopedias.
Well, I know we had dictionaries. And well, yeah, well, in many homes they had a dictionary, because a dictionary was the most valuable part of our education. And, of course, we had some in school, but you had a lot of homework you had to do once you got home. So a dictionary, you could always find a dictionary in someone's home. It may not be an updated dictionary, but it was a dictionary. Now, encyclopedias, that was a little bit different. And also we had access to the Chappier Public Library. In fact, blacks used to use the Chappier Public Library a whole lot. We had, I remember in junior high, we had some essay papers and things to do. A lot of times I went to the Chappier Public Library to look up things, you know, in the library if I didn't have a book at home or someone else didn't have it.
So you had access to the library?
Oh, yes, and we used to check books out and bring them home, especially during the summer. I used to go all the time because I just loved to read. And so we would check books out, and you have 7 days to take the book back.
Were your grandparents around? Were they involved at all? Did they ask you about education? Did they encourage you in any way?
Oh, well, see, they didn't really have to encourage you, because you knew you had to go. I mean, there was no encouragement, because that was part of, you know, life. You had to go to school.
Right.
And they wanted you to go to elementary school, they wanted you to go to junior high, and they wanted you to finish high school. So some of these laws, I think, were lax, or somebody didn't enforce them enough when the schools consolidated. Because it was always a thing in the black community that you had to go to school. And that's all your parents required of you, was for you to go to school and pray the Lord if you goof up, or was, you know, if you're rude in a class, your behavior had to be excellent while you was in school. If it was not, then, you know, you got a spanking from your teachers, then you got another one when you got home. So you did everything you could not to get the two spankings.
Tell me about the PTA meetings. Did your parents go to PTA meetings?
Just about every parent who had a child in school, they would show up for the PTA meetings. If they couldn't make it, you know, 1 month, they would surely go the next month. Remember, everybody was still working, but they had an interest in their kids' education, and also if the school was in need of something. Because sometimes parents would, you know, just take money out of their pocket, you know, to fill in what the Chapel Carberry school system, you know, would not provide them. And so it was just, parents supported kids on everything that they did. Everything. I mean, the entire community. And if a parent couldn't go to a PTA meeting, they would ask somebody kin to them in their family or somebody on their street. If they had a comment or something they want, you know, to say or whatever, they would write it down and give it to a neighbor to take in for them.
Someone said to me that going to a PTA meeting was like going to church.
Well, it was like a revival sort. You know, everybody was glad to see one another. This was not on a Saturday or Sunday when everybody got on Saturday to get together, get your hair cut, get your shoes shined. You're getting ready for Sunday. And, you know, a lot of people did get together on Saturdays because they were interacting with one another, you know, these beauty parlors or wherever. But then on Sundays, everybody was together, you know, church or whatever, and visiting one another. But when you went to the PTA meeting, that was just another time for you to see many of the parents who lived out in the county. And, you know, everybody came together then. So that was just a good time for you to see just about everybody in one spot. And so, you know, everybody had to talk and all that. But they did serious business on, you know, school business. But a lot of it was just glad to see our neighbor, you know.
How did you make decisions at the PTA meeting? You happen to remember what your parents said about them. Did they make them by committee, or did everybody vote?
No, see, I don't remember that part of it. That part I don't remember. But I know that my parents will look forward to going to PTA meetings. And, you know, my mother went to most of them. Because we always left a parent home, you know, with the kids. And so my mother went most of the time. And she was just always glad to go and just smiling. And, you know, when she got back, and tell my father who was there, such and such said hello, and, you know.
Were there any performances put on at the PTA meeting?
See, I don't know. Because I think went maybe one or two with my mother. I just went along just to be going.
Now, you went to Chapel Hill Junior High School,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And was the first year that you went there 1965 or 66?
No. Chapel Hill High School?
Junior high.
No, I don't know. I was in the seventh grade. And so...
Did you have any preparation?
Oh, absolutely. No, because, see, I didn't know I was going to that school. I thought I was going to, at that time, my class in the seventh grade, they went to Frank Porter Graham, because Frank Porter Graham Elementary School was built then, even though my class was in the seventh grade. That's where I thought I was going. And then I found out something like maybe, it wasn't a week before I went, maybe two or three days before I even went to school, I found out that's where I was going.
Did you think you were going to Lincoln?
Well, I knew I was going to Frank Porter Graham because that's where they had just built the school.
Right.
And so, and I knew that's where I was going to go, but I knew that I was going to end up at Lincoln, you know, from there to Lincoln.
And Frank Porter Graham, was that mostly white and just a few blacks?
Well, blacks.
It was mostly black.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When the new Chapel Hill High School was open, mm-hmm. Was it supposed to be integrated the first year, or was it supposed to be all white the first year? Do you remember any discussion of this?
I don't remember any discussions on it, but it wouldn't have mattered because, you see, I was already there. You know, so they couldn't have had it all white because it would have been impossible. You can't send kids who have been in that integrated system from the 7th on. You couldn't send them to Lincoln because we were already there. Look how many years we were already there. So it might have been a discussion to make it all white, but it couldn't have done it.
What do you think the graduates of Lincoln High School as a group have accomplished? Do you look at them as different from...
I look at them as being special, very, very special, because they got a chance to stay within their own environment, a learning environment, a safe environment, unstressful environment, and they could excel because they were in an environment that accepted them. And being in an environment like that, you can excel. You know, you could have trouble comprehending, but even if you had trouble comprehending, you were in an environment that was so comfortable to you that you wanted to try to do better. And if you could not do better, it was okay because you were still in that comfortable environment that you grew up in and that you expected from your community. Now, the Lincoln graduates, they were prepared to go out into the world. They were prepared to go out into a black world, though. Go to black schools. And even some went to white universities, but they were ready because they had the backbone of the black community when they needed the community the most. And that was in those times when they were at Lincoln. And remember now, parents supported the kids in everything they did. You did not go out on a ball field or a basketball court without your parents there. You looked in the stands, they were there. And about your whole entire family was there. And if you didn't get in the ball game, that's all right. That's all right. You're part of the family. We're part of the family. But, so you see, they took that type of thing out into the world because your parents prepared you for as soon as you finish high school, you're on your own. It's time for you to think for yourself. It's time for you, if you want to get a job, get your own place, you was ready. Because they prepared you all through life for this moment. You take the girls, the young girls, they had them prepared. You could cook, clean up, do the whole nine yards, you know, when at the age of 18 and you're ready to go out. Even at the age of 16, women back then, they were so mature that they could almost run a household, you know.
What about 20 years later, 30 years later, do you think that the accomplishments of the graduates are any more than, say, other schools or the Chapel Hill High School, the black graduates
yeah.
of Chapel Hill High School?
Well, I tell you, the black graduates of Lincoln High School, they had a jump on life. I think they succeeded more so than our kids coming out now. Our kids coming out now, they live in this society. And this is the society that they have to live in. But for as the Lincoln graduates who came out of that school, they had them went through half of their life stress-free. And so when they went on out into what we call the real world, after they, most of them back then, especially the men, the key is on the men and what the black males did in that day. The black males in that day, they were responsible black males. It was expected of them when they finished school to do three things. One, the military is always an option for you, that you're making something of yourself. Two, you can go on to college. If not a 4-year, then a 2-year. Three, you got a job if you're not going to do the other two. It was like mandatory. Parents were no longer going to support you. You have to do that. And the black males of that day, that's what they did. You didn't see a whole lot of black males in prison. You didn't see a whole lot of black males doing alcohol, drugs. It was like unheard of. And so the black males, they just had a sense that I want to be somebody. I want to take care of my family. They came out of that atmosphere, so it just followed them in life. Excuse me. Got a dry mouth. But that's why then when integration came along, I told you a lot of rules and things that we were, used to and guided by. A lot of those rules changed. And it changed because we was in a different environment. We got mixed in with an environment where the rules were very lax. And where you come out of an environment, excuse me, where the rules, I might have to get one. Where was I? Yes, in that environment, it was, I guess the foundation of the black community was built on rules. And you followed the rules, and the rules were enforced by everyone in the black community. What I mean by that, teachers, ministers, everyone who you came in contact with that had authority, they enforced the rules. Kids knew their place. They did not get out of place. And so when you come out of an environment like that and you mixed in another environment where these rules and things were sometimes not enforced, it had an effect on you. Because what you can get away with in school, you want to do the same thing when you got home. And your parents were not having anything to do with that.
Did you have a hair code as to how your hair had to be done when you were at Lincoln High School?
Well, now, at Lincoln, I don't know about the hair code, but I do know when I was here at Northside, very seldom did you see someone wear the hair what we call down. You usually saw plaits or you saw ponytails. Most of the time when black kids wore the hair down, I say for the girls, it was on a Sunday or during Easter. You see, everything came at its time. There was a place and time for everything. So we were not allowed to wear stockings or pantyhose. Well, they didn't have pantyhose, they just had stockings when you was in elementary school. But the moment I went to Champion Junior High, they were wearing stockings. Many things that we were prohibited to wear, the females were wearing them. Pants were not permitted.
So the dress black code school was different.
Dress code was different.
And maybe even how you could fix your hair?
Well, the hair thing was not such a big deal. It was something that was not mandatory, but it was just a way in the black community how they sent you to school. And you had to have your shirt tails in, and you couldn't chew gum in class, you couldn't talk out of turn. Just strict rules we had here. It depends on what class or what teacher.
So you had chew gum in some classes?
Yes. I mean, you could do some of everything in some classes, but they had rules and regulations too, but they did not enforce them like they did in a black school.
What about smoking when you got to the high school?
Absolutely not. Not at Lincoln,
what
no.
What about at Chapel Hill High?
Chapel High, sneak and do just about anything you want to do.
Did you see any alcohol use in the schoolyard at Chapel Hill High?
Well, if I did, it was covered up in, drink bottles, cups. You never really knew it until somebody told you.
So it did go on.
I mean, it went on because it went on, but I doubt if any student going to a black school would even try that. The fear of being disciplined by your parents and by the school itself was just too great for you to try something like that.
What do you think is happening to the black community now? Is it getting smaller? Is it getting bigger? And if it is getting smaller, why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think it's getting smaller because we're spread it out now. Areas where we will never, ever thought, you know, to venture into, now we are there. And it's what the town calls integrating Chapel Hill. And the way the town has figured out a way to integrate Chapel Hill is to build public housing in white areas where we have never lived before. You have Ridgefield, which is down by University Mall. You didn't have any blacks in that area until the town built public housing. There's another area right behind Chapel Hill Cemetery, and that's on off of Legion Road. You didn't have blacks in that area. The town put a public housing unit in there. Okay, we have another one. I think it's a Sunbright place. I think it's Airport Road, like you're going out towards Riva Derry Road. They put, you know, public housing out there. And because... Yes, in Piney Mountain Road. But now you did have some blacks that lived out on Piney Mountain Road. That was blacks before whites even thought about it.
And they're still there.
Right, and the blacks owned a whole lot of land and stuff out there, but, you know, they sold a lot of it. But at that time, the blacks were there way before public housing was. The blacks were there in the 60s, and, you know, so they've been out there. Nobody else wanted to go, but, you know, everybody wants to go now. Excuse me, but... when the town first came, when the town first built public housing, it was in the black community. It was not outside the black community. But the town wanted to integrate Chapel Hill throughout, and so that's just one way to do it. And when you sit down and you look at your map of Chapel Hill and you look at how many blacks live in this area versus how many whites, you have a little group that lives there because the town says if you want to live in public housing, this is where you have to go. So in fact, they forcing you to live together because trust me, the first ones went down to Ridgefield and the people in Ridgefield fought to keep them out. But that was town property, so blacks got to live there.
Do you think that's a good thing?
I don't think anything is good when you force it. Because, and it's always political people who force these things, but they don't have to live in it. They don't have to do these things that they put upon other people. It's only the people directly involved in it, like students or maybe homeowners, who are affected by all of these things. Because you see, your town leaders, they can go home to a different community. They don't have to deal with it, don't even have to see it. And so, same as like when you're busing kids here in Chapel Hill, you take this area right here. The kids over here in this area were going to school to Glenwood, all the way to Glenwood Elementary, but you had Estes Hill right around the corner. Racial balance, the kids here had to go to Glenwood, and our kids coming from here going to Glenwood have never, ever fared well at Glenwood School. My son went there. And the kids would tell you that was just a no-no. And also, now you have some kids on Merritt Mill Road in that area. They go way out to East Chapel Hill High, racial balance, when they're closer to Chapel Hill High School. But racial balance, you got to send them. Now, the further out that they go near Hillsboro, you got to have some kids in the area. So some kids are going to be shuffled around so you never have an all-white school, even though they're building all the schools in the white neighborhoods. White communities where black kids can't live, the housing prices is just too high. So you're going to bust the kids from over in this way. You're going to have them hopping all around town for the racial balance.
Do you think that they're avoiding building schools in the black areas? Or is it that there's more land that's available in the white areas? Why do you think that...
Well, just about everything is taken up in the black community, so it's nothing left. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still have Lincoln sitting there. That can be a school. That could be an elementary school. They can build another administrative office anywhere. But that could be an elementary school right there. Mm-hmm. Kids would be closer to their own environment. They may even feel more comfortable in it. Maybe one day someone would take that experiment up and just see how these kids survive in an environment that's close to their own. But I bet you they can learn better. It would probably be the highest scoring school we have here in Chapel Hill if a kid went to school in their environment, because white kids don't have to worry about this no matter where the school is at, because it's still their environment. Now you have Chapel Hill High School. There were blacks living out there in that neighborhood long before the school was built. But still, they don't have the kinship to Chapel Hill High School that they did with Lincoln. You have the sense of ownership. And so, even though they lived like on Rogers Road, this is what I'm talking about, Rogers Road, Chapel Hill High School was just really not their school. They didn't have the school spirit. A lot of things that was lacking. And even if you did, you know, gather up a little bit of school spirit, it was not the same. Because school spirit coming from Lincoln, it was something that came straight out of your heart, almost coming from your soul. And that's the only kind of, you know, that's the only kind that we've ever had